Hello, and welcome to our program, Reader's Digest, brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio. I'm John Fisher, and during the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from Reader's Digest here on Owl Radio. First up, Everyday Miracles. A couple was astonished to see who had taken up residence in their mailbox. Here's Tiny New Neighbors by Kathy Free from the Washington Post in Reader's Digest. Don Powell was pulling the usual assortment of envelopes from the mailbox outside his home in Orchard Lake Village, Michigan, where he noticed something out of the ordinary. A tiny doll couple was sitting on a love seat inside the mailbox. A small sticky note was also tucked inside. "We've decided to live here," the message read. It was signed from Mary and Shelley. Powell, 72 years old, says he initially figured that somebody must have left the wooden dolls inside his mailbox back in August 2022 by mistake. He and his wife, Nancy Powell, had a custom-designed mailbox resembling their contemporary White House installed about 4 years ago. "We could understand why dolls would want to move in such a nice mailbox, but we were still perplexed," Don says. "I asked the neighbors whether anybody had left dolls in their mailboxes, and everyone told me no," he says. "So I thought, this must just be a joke, and whoever left them here will come back to get them. I moved them to the back of the mailbox to see what would happen." A few days passed, and nobody retrieved the dolls, he says, noting that he and his wife soon discovered that the small couple had acquired an end table, a throw rug, and a pillow. "I also have a sense of humor, so I left a note of my own, saying that what the home really needed was a refrigerator stocked with food," he says. The fridge was never delivered, but over the next several months, additional items mysteriously showed up. A four-poster bed, a painting, and a wood-burning stove, to name a few. More than a year later, Mary and Shelley are still living rent-free in the mailbox, to the delight of neighbors who now follow Don's updates on Orchard Lake Village's Next Door page. Don first posted about the tiny squatters on August 21st, 2022, hoping that might solve the mystery. "A homeless couple has taken up residence inside our mailbox. I have included photos of what it all looks like, so you don't think I'm making any of this up," he wrote on Next Door. "Some people initially thought that I had planted the dolls myself, but that is definitely not the case," Don says. "All I did was provide a mailbox. Somebody else decided to make it into a home for Mary and Shelley." Nancy Powell says she can vouch for her husband. "It was honestly a surprise to us," she says. "Don is the kind of person, though, to play along with it." The Powells' next-door neighbor, Terry Fallahy, says he believes that Don did not move the dolls into the mailbox himself. "It's just somebody out there who's having some fun, giving us all a little community humor," Fallahy says. "Whoever is doing this is obviously somebody who is incredibly artistic and clever," he says. "Don has a lot of skill sets, but doing something this detailed with dolls isn't his forte." After Don and Nancy moved into their home in Orchard Lake Village about 5 years ago, they decided to pay a local craftsman $250 to design a mailbox resembling their house, with lots of windows on the top and sides to let the light in. The interior is roomy, measuring 26 inches long, 15 inches wide, and 10 inches high. It has solar-powered ceiling lights to illuminate the mailbox at night. Although a person can be fined up to $5,000 for putting items without postage inside somebody else's mailbox, Don says he could not imagine alerting the authorities and evicting the dolls. "I asked our mail carrier if there would be a problem delivering our mail with the dolls in there, and he told me no. There was plenty of room," Don says. He also said he got a kick out of seeing what was going on inside my mailbox. Every month or so, particularly around holidays, the Powells find something new tucked inside the box for Mary and Shelley. For Halloween 2022, the doll couple temporarily disappeared and were replaced by two small skeletons, he says, and at Christmas time, a decorated tree was left with tiny presents. Don says whoever left the gifts took them back right after Christmas before he could open the boxes to see if anything was inside. The doll couple has also acquired a cat, he says. It's getting a little crowded, especially because their cousin Shirley has also moved in, along with a service dog named Maggie, Don says. The note left in the mailbox said they were all grateful to find a one-story house because they'd previously lived in a Dutch-style dollhouse, he says. I'm assuming that place had more stairs. After packages were left for the holidays, Don says he added a tiny addition of his own outside the mailbox, a miniature letterbox. I decided it made sense to give them one, since their tiny letters were getting mixed up with ours and could get lost in the mail, he says. Don says he now doesn't want to know who is responsible for the mailbox saga because he's hoping it will continue. People in the neighborhood are enjoying it and stop by sometimes to ask questions, he says. They want to know what we're charging for rent and who mows the lawn. Some people ask if I've thought about installing an outdoor camera, but personally, I like the mystery of it. Next in Reader's Digest, health. 10 nutrition myths, plus what health experts want you to know instead. Here's Sophie Egan from the New York Times in Reader's Digest. Myth 1. Fresh fruits and vegetables are always healthier than canned, frozen, or dried varieties. Despite the enduring belief that fresh is best, research has found that frozen, canned, and dried fruits and vegetables can be just as nutritious as their fresh counterparts. They can also be a money saver and an easy way to make sure there are always fruits and vegetables available at home, said Sarah Bleich, a professor of public health policy at Harvard University. One caveat, some canned, frozen, or dried varieties contain added sugars, saturated fats, and sodium, so be sure to read nutrition labels and opt for products that keep those ingredients to a minimum. Yes, that means you should skip the broccoli with the cheese sauce. Myth number 2. All fat is bad. When studies published in the late 1940s found correlations between high-fat diets and high levels of cholesterol, experts reasoned that if you reduced the amount of total fats in your diet, your risk for heart disease would go down. By the 1980s, doctors, federal health experts, the food industry, and the news media were reporting that a low-fat diet could benefit everyone, even though there was no solid evidence that doing so would prevent heart disease, obesity, and other health issues. As a result, said Vijaya Surampudi, an assistant professor of medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles, Center for Human Nutrition, many people and food manufacturers replaced calories from fat with calories from refined carbohydrates, such as white flour and added sugar. Remember Snackwells? Instead of helping the country stay slim, the rates of overweight and obesity went up significantly, she said. In reality, not all fats are bad. While certain types, such as trans fats, can increase your risk for heart disease or stroke, healthy fats help reduce your risk. Examples include monounsaturated fats found in olive oil, avocados, and certain nuts and seeds, and polyunsaturated fats found in sunflower oil, walnuts, fish, and flaxseed. Good fats are also important for supplying energy, producing important hormones, supporting cell function, and aiding in the absorption of some nutrients. If you see a product labeled quote-unquote fat-free, don't automatically assume it is healthy, Dr. Surampudi said. Instead, prioritize products with simple ingredients and no added sugars. Myth number three, calories in, calories out is the most important factor for long-term weight gain. It's true that if you consume more calories than you burn, you will probably gain weight. And if you burn more calories than you consume, you will probably lose weight, at least for the short term. But research does not suggest that eating more will result in becoming overweight or obese. Rather, it's the types of foods we eat that may be the long-term drivers of those conditions, said Darius Mosafarian, a professor of nutrition and medicine at Tufts University. Ultra-processed foods such as refined starchy snacks, cereals, crackers, energy bars, baked goods, sodas, and sweets can lead to weight gain. That's because they are rapidly digested and flood the bloodstream with glucose, fructose, and amino acids, which are converted to fat by the liver. Instead, the best way to maintain a healthy weight is to make the shift from counting calories to prioritizing healthy eating overall. That's right, quality over quantity. Myth number four, people with type 2 diabetes shouldn't eat fruit. This myth stems from conflating fruit juices, which can raise blood sugar levels because of their high sugar and low fiber content, with whole fruits. But research has found this is not the case. Some studies show, for instance, that those who consume one serving of whole fruit per day, particularly blueberries, grapes, and apples, have a lower risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And other research suggests that if you already have type 2 diabetes, eating whole fruits can help control your blood sugar. It's time to bust this myth, says Linda Hsu, director of culinary medicine and lifestyle medicine at Kaiser Permanente San Francisco, adding that everyone, including those with type 2 diabetes, can benefit from fruits, health-promoting vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and fiber. Myth number five, plant milk is healthier than dairy milk. It's just not true, said Kathleen Merrigan, professor of sustainable food systems at Arizona State University and a former U.S. Deputy Secretary of Agriculture. Consider protein. Typically, cow's milk has about 8 grams of protein per cup, whereas almond milk typically has around 1 to 2 grams per cup, and oat milk usually has around 2 to 3 grams per cup. While the nutrition of plant-based beverages can vary, Merrigan said, many have more added ingredients, such as sodium and added sugars, which can contribute to poor health than cow's milk. We're halfway through the 10 nutrition myths in Reader's Digest. Here's myth number 6. Potatoes are bad for you. Potatoes have often been vilified in the nutrition community because of their high glycemic index, which means they contain rapidly digestible carbohydrates that can spike your blood sugar. However, potatoes can actually be beneficial for health, said Daphne Altema Johnson, a program officer of Food Communities and Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. They are rich in vitamin C, potassium, fiber, and other nutrients, especially when consumed with the skin. They are also inexpensive and found year-round in grocery stores. To keep them healthy, stick to roasting, baking, boiling, and air frying. Myth number 7. Don't feed peanuts to little kids. For years, experts told new parents that the best way to prevent their children from developing food allergies was to avoid feeding them common allergenic foods, such as peanuts or eggs, during their first few years of life. But now, allergy experts say it's better to introduce peanut products early on. If your baby doesn't have severe eczema or a known food allergy, you can start introducing peanut products. Consider peanut puffs, peanut powders, or watered-down peanut butter, but not whole peanuts, at around 4 to 6 months, when your baby is ready for solids. Start with 2 teaspoons of smooth peanut butter mixed with water, breast milk, or formula 2 to 3 times a week, said Rucha Gupta, director of the Center for Food Allergy and Asthma Research at Northwestern University. If your baby has severe eczema, ask your pediatrician or an allergist about starting peanut products. It is also important to feed your baby a diverse diet in their first year of life to prevent food allergies, Dr. Gupta said. Myth number 8, the protein in plants is incomplete. Where do you get your protein is the number one question vegetarians get asked, says Christopher Gardner, a nutrition scientist and professor of medicine at Stanford University. The myth is that plants are completely missing some amino acids, also known as the building blocks of proteins, he added. But in reality, all plant-based foods contain all 20 amino acids, including all 9 essential ones. The difference is that the proportion isn't as ideal as the proportion of amino acids in animal-based foods. So to get an adequate mix, you simply need to eat a variety of plant-based foods, such as beans, grains, and nuts, throughout the day and eat enough total protein. Luckily, most Americans get more than enough. It's easier than most people think, Gardner said. Number 9. Eating soy can increase breast cancer risk. High doses of plant estrogens in soy, called isoflavones, have been found to stimulate breast tumor cell growth in animal studies. However, this relationship has not been substantiated in human studies, said Frank B. Hugh, chair of the Department of Nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. So far, the science does not indicate a link between soy and breast cancer risk in humans. Instead, consuming soy-based foods and drinks, including tofu, tempeh, edamame, miso, and soy milk, may even have a protective effect toward breast cancer risk and survival. Soy foods are also a powerhouse of beneficial nutrients related to reduced heart disease risk, such as high-quality protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals, Dr. Hugh said. And finally, myth number 10, the best nutrition advice keeps changing. This is not the case, said Marion Nestle, a professor emerita of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University. Adding, in the 1950s, the first dietary recommendations for prevention of obesity, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and the like, advised balancing calories and minimizing foods high in saturated fat, salt, and sugar. The current U.S. dietary guidelines urge the same. Yes, science evolves, but the bottom line guidance remains consistent. As author Michael Pollan simply put it, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. That advice worked 70 years ago, and it still does today. And it leaves plenty of room for eating foods you love. Next in Reader's Digest, we go to The Healthy. It's wellness from thehealthy.com, Reader's Digest's wellness site. How to get in on the game of pickleball. If you haven't already, here's Play Pickleball by Karen Robach of Reader's Digest. Until recently, no one had heard of this game with the crazy name. In 2022, in the United States, nearly 5 million people played the friendly racket sport on courts around the country. There's even a major league for pickleball, MLP for short, with pro athletes Tom Brady, Kim Clijsters, and LeBron James counted among the team owners. The International Federation of Pickleball, with 60 member countries and counting, is working to make sure pickleball will be part of the 2028 Olympic Games in Los Angeles. If you haven't played it yourself, you've probably at least heard of pickleball. Here's how the game is played. Pickleball takes components from tennis, badminton, and table tennis, says Hope Tolley, Managing Director of Recreational Programs for USA Pickleball. It's played on a badminton-sized court with a slightly lowered tennis net, using square paddles and a small perforated plastic ball that's similar in size to a tennis ball, but much lighter. Since the lighter ball doesn't bounce as much, it's easier to get a rally going. Unlike tennis, you can score only when it's your turn to serve. The goal is to keep the ball in the air, and if your opponent, called the receiver, fails to return the ball over the net, either from the serve or in a rally, you get the point. Be sure to hit with enough force or you'll end up with a falafel, pickleball slang for a shot that falls short of the net. Matches can be played in doubles or singles, and games are played to 11 points and must be won by a margin of at least 2 points. Lose with a score of 11-0 and you've been quote-unquote pickled. Whether you play regularly and consider yourself a quote-unquote pickler, or only once in a while, it's a very social game and a perfect way to make new friends, says Tolley. It's a sport that's bringing folks together. Part of the appeal is that pickleball is easy to learn and you don't have to be super athletic to pick it up. Fans range from kids to seniors, with those ages 18 to 34 making up the fastest growing player group. Pickleball has been around since the 1960s. It started in the backyard of future U.S. Representative Joel Pritchard from Washington. He and two dad friends started an improvised game of badminton with the goal of keeping their kids busy, using what was on hand, an old badminton court, some table tennis paddles, a volleyball net, and a wiffle ball. Fast forward 6 decades and pickleball, and the name is a nod to the term pickle boats, used to describe a motley group of rowers who are thrown together at random to compete, is one of the hottest trends in sports and popular culture. Playing the game can improve your hand-eye coordination and increase reaction time. And because you can vary the intensity, going all out, or taking a slower pace, pickleball suits serious athletes and weekend warriors alike. It's a great aerobic workout, and because it's a low-impact sport, it's easy on your joints. You don't need to join a league or have a pickleball court to get in on the action. It can be played in non-traditional spaces like gymnasiums and parking lots, says Tolley. Any smooth surface will work, as long as you have a net, a ball, and a paddle. People who are really into the sport can join tournaments at various levels. The first World Pickleball Games will be held next summer at the Austin Pickle Ranch in Austin, Texas. By the year 2030, pickleball is expected to have as many as 40 million players worldwide. Its popularity has also led to increased interest in other racket sports. Padel, a fast-paced combination of tennis and squash invented in Mexico in the late 1960s, is catching on across Europe and South America. And our last article from Reader's Digest this week comes from The Art of Living, the delicious beginnings of a beloved winter tradition, drinking hot chocolate. Here's Leela El Shanawi with A Cup of Comfort in Reader's Digest. After skating, skiing, or shoveling snow, nothing warms you up better than a cup of hot cocoa. Although today's typical toppings, whipped cream, marshmallows, crushed peppermint candy, may be modern marvels, chocolate was first consumed in liquid form by the Olmec people of northwestern Central America around 1500 BC. It was even enjoyed by the Aztec emperor Montezuma, and the Aztec word for it, pronounced xocoatl or xocoalotl, evolved into the English word chocolate. But the Aztecs didn't serve their cocoa hot, and since sugar had not yet arrived from Europe back then, the drink was often flavored with peppers and spices. It may not have been quite as indulgent as today's version, but it was more palatable if you believed, as the Aztecs did, that chocolate was a gift from the gods and had healing properties. After the Spanish arrived in the Americas in the 1500s, liquid chocolate made its way across the pond, where wealthy Europeans added sugar and drank it warm. In Chocolate, History, Culture, and Heritage, author Bertram Gordon says hot chocolate became, quote-unquote, the beverage of the aristocracy, as sugar was still a luxury. Marie Antoinette even had a servant with the title Chocolate Maker to the Queen. Doctors also began using it to mask the unpleasant taste of medicines, and some doctors today still suggest that parents try that. Soon enough, though, hot chocolate caught on with the masses. Chocolate houses, a cross between cafes and casinos, started popping up around 17th century Europe. In these lively places, hot chocolate was poured from gilded pots into elegant cups. Anyone looking for such a posh experience can still find it today at the famed Parisian tea room Angelina's, which also has a location in New York City. But by the end of the 18th century, chocolate houses had mostly died off, partly because the cost of chocolate was much higher than of coffee or tea. In colonial America, meanwhile, George Washington is said to have enjoyed a breakfast of cornmeal pancakes alongside a warm chocolate drink, rumored to have been spiked with brandy. Marshmallows first came into the picture in the year 1917, when the company Angelus Marshmallows published a recipe for hot cocoa topped with their product. In another genius marketing move, the company also hitched its wagon to sweet potatoes with a recipe for the side dish that has since become a Thanksgiving staple. Instant cocoa is another American invention, created in the late 1950s when dairy company owner Charles Sanna faced an oversupply of powdered coffee creamer. His solution? Mix the creamer, sugar, and cocoa powder together, thus creating the original Swiss Miss formulation. Taking a tour of international cups of cocoa, in Italy you can try cioccolata calda, a thick pudding-like version. In Colombia and Ecuador, chocolate caliente is served with a dollop of soft farmer cheese, a divinely gooey experience. And Filipino hot chocolate, sikwate, is served with mango chunks. However you choose to jazz up your own cup, the simple pleasure of drinking a warm, chocolatey beverage is one that hasn't gotten old for thousands of years. A gift from the gods? Perhaps, but it's certainly one that keeps on giving. You have been listening to Reader's Digest on OWL Radio. You can listen to OWL Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program is replayed after 9 o'clock in the evening. This is John Fisher saying goodbye from Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center in San Antonio.